Welcome to segment two of Radio Free Redoubt. This is the second segment in the three-part series that we're doing. We're breaking this episode, 1834, down into three separate audio files so that you'll be able to share them separately with your friends, as each of these topics may apply to somebody that might come to mind for you. So this segment is going to be Glenn Tate, the author Glenn Tate of the 299 Days book series, talking about prepping 2.0, and a special announcement too that he had asked me to come and make the introduction and make the announcement. So definitely don't want to tune out and listen to this. This is really, really great news. This is very cool. This segment is brought to you by Werks Holsters, WERKZ.com, for custom-made holsters made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And I have my brand new Liberty State holster, Kydex holster, with the Liberty State seal. And it is beautiful. Fits my Glock 19 perfectly. And they're taking part of the proceeds and donating that to help support the Liberty State movement. So support Werks Holsters and support Liberty State today if you want to get in on that deal and get a Liberty State seal holster from Werks Holsters. Werks.com. All right, now for the segment two of Glenn Tate's Prepping 2.0 from the Inland Northwest Preparedness Expo, Sunday, September 23rd. All right, this is John Jacob Schmidt from Radio Free Redoubt. I want to welcome all of our listeners who are tuned in right now listening. And I got a special announcement here I want to make and an introduction here. A great friend of mine, the author of the 10 book series, the 299 days book series, all 10 audio books are out also. And they've got a booth right over here. You'll also be able to meet the lovely Shelby Gallagher. And she's got her second book coming out October 29th, so be able to meet both of them. So it's an honor to be able to introduce to you Glenn Tate, the author, to talk about Prepping 2.0. You thought you missed Prepping 1.0? You didn't. You're already there. You got your food. You got your guns. What next? Well, Glenn's going to address that and talk about taking your preps to the next level. Well, we take advantage of this borrowed time that we have now. And so I'm going to turn it over to him. But first, we also have a very special announcement to make here. And I think I'm the first one to be able to make this. This is a huge honor. But you guys have been noticing Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher traveling around the country doing book signings together an awful lot. You think maybe there's maybe a little bit of chemistry there, you would think, but it's true. So the announcement is Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher just got married. Did you know that? Give them a hand. Round of applause. So you're gonna be seeing them together in book signings for a long time to come. All right, and many happy years to both of you and happy book writing. And who knows, we might actually see a book series come out with Glenn and Shelby characters together. So more material. There's no shortage of writing material now, right? So pretty dynamic team. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can produce. And they're great friends. And so it's my pleasure to introduce to you Glenn Tate.
Thank you, John Jacob. Thank you. This is a bigger deal, Shelby, than I thought. This announcement. This is special. Well, thank you. Well, thank you for coming out. This expo, this Inland Northwest Preparedness Expo, has been great. It's a great facility. There's been some great vendors and great people. And I want to thank all the people that put it together, because it takes a lot of work to put one of these together, and they're all volunteers. And so thank you. And I understand last year it wasn't nearly as large. So folks are coming, both vendors and guests, and that's great. It's awesome to be in North Idaho. We love coming here. People are so nice. It's a great break from the Seattle metropolitan area, to put it mildly. And this seems to be the Northern Idaho sort of a epicenter of the preparedness community, and it's great to see. Please ask lots of questions at the end. I love answering questions because questions mean there's a topic on your mind and that's important to you. And what I have to say may not be important to you, but at least I can answer some questions. I love questions about, well, anything really. The books in particular, sometimes people say, there was this one thing and it's been bugging me and what was the deal with that? And I'll either have a good answer or I'll have a bad answer. We'll see, right? I mean, it's unscripted, we shall see. So thank you. So John Jacob mentioned Prepping 2.0, and this is a concept that Shelby and I have come up with, and we are going to have in probably the late fall a podcast of our own called Prepping 2.0. And the idea is exactly what he mentioned. Prepping 1.0 is you've got your beans and your rice, awesome. You've got some guns, good. That's a good thing. You might have other things and you might have some other skills and you've thought about things and you think, okay, I'm pretty well squared away. There's more to it than that. And the 2.0, the next level that I'm talking about centers on, I'll talk more about this, but water, everybody forgets water. You know, it's the most basic elemental thing you need. And a lot of preppers don't think about it. I guess water is boring compared to, you know, freeze-dried food and all that kind of cool stuff. But you, by the way, need water to rehydrate freeze-dried food. So, and it's we're going to focus on water. And this isn't a big class or anything. And I just wanted to mention what some of the 2.0 items are. The other one is comms, radio communications that you need. I've started a new thing called PAM, P-A-M radio, Prepper Amateur Radio. And there's going to be some flashcards on the iPhone and Android platform that have basic questions. The stuff you need to know, preppers need to know, and none of the stuff you don't need to know. Ham radio is this big scary concept. You have to take a test and there's an FCC license and oh my goodness, I have to put a giant antenna. I don't have time for another hobby. I don't have the money for another hobby. And I ran into that myself, and how I resolved that was I figured out through trial and error primarily, but also going to experts, John Jacob Schmidt being one of them, about what do I need to know as a prepper. I need to be able to talk to five or six people at a time, probably have a base station, maybe get some news from the outside world, but I don't need a $10,000 radio to talk to Greenland because I just don't care. Nobody in Greenland has any information that I need, and they probably don't want to hear from me, and they probably speak Danish anyway and can't understand anything, so why would I do that? So it's taking all the fancy, expensive, hindrance sort of stuff out of ham radio, and then these flashcards will say things like, what's a better frequency for working inside buildings versus maybe 3 or 4 miles? And another question might be something like, is CB radio worthless? The answer is no, by the way. What kind of range can I expect out of a CB radio? Well, it depends, 3 to 5 miles. Those sorts of really practical things that you need to know. There are also going to be links in the flashcards to websites where you can buy the stuff. For example, what's a good CB radio? Well, here are a couple that I think are good, and there are links there, and it'll go to a place where you can go get it. So you don't have to spend all the time and energy researching what it is you want. Because you know what? Just about all of us have jobs and kids or grandkids. We have things going on. Maybe you're active in local politics or something, but you don't have all the time in the world to think about this and go on the internet for 2 weeks and find that exactly perfect product. And then, by the way, the way technology is going and prices are coming down and things, in the 2 weeks it takes you to make this purchasing decision, there's probably something better and cheaper that just came out, right? The PAM radio flashcards will be updated, so you won't have that to worry about. So that was an idea on comms. The other thing that I think people need for Prepping 2.0 is some basic night vision equipment to see if people are coming and trying to take their stuff. So that's what PAM radio, well, I should say, that's what Prepping 2.0 is all about. I want to go back in time. I don't have any awesome sound effects for the time machine music, but going back in time to 2008, 2009, a lot of us, I know this is true of me, I know it's true of Shelby, a lot of us, you know, the Obama administration just started, he came into office, did things that and promised to do things that we were politically not exactly happy about. It seemed like the country had taken a giant shift that was not the direction we would have gone. And so it was kind of a bad time. The example, we were listening to some old podcasts that I did, secret podcasts. I won't even tell you the name of it because a bunch of other people I did it with have jobs in government and other things than they. We would talk about how things were kind of falling apart. And so we had to keep it secret, which, by the way, is a terrible marketing plan for getting listeners. I should have thought of this. So he said, yeah, we're in this cool podcast, and we did these episodes, and then it's like, well, we can't tell anybody about it. So we had, you know, we'd like tell our friends, and they thought it was hilarious and fun, and but there was like four listeners. So we won't be doing that again. But we went back, and we were listening to episodes in 2011. And go back in time. Think back. I mean, everybody think where you were in 2011. Things seemed pretty bleak. And I remember one of the stories we were doing on our podcast was a school district in Utah had been fined $15,000 for selling soda pop that had sugar in it. If you remember, the first lady had, Michelle Obama, had this big thing about making school lunches really healthy, and they were, you know, making kids eat lunches that they weren't going to eat, and it was a giant disaster. And they actually fined a school district, and that was the example that came to mind, and that was a bleak time. And you're thinking to yourself, I grew up in a America that was a particular way, and I kind of like it, and now it seems like America has changed radically. I don't remember high schools being fined for having, you know, sugared pop, and things had changed, and you thought, geez, it seems like things are falling apart. And so you were in prepping 1.1. You were perhaps a little panicked, and you were buying beans and rice and guns. We all know the figures on gun sales around this time. Actually, records kept getting set, so there was no real point. But I mean, the sales curve, I mean, it was just incredible. Guns were flying off the shelves. A lot of people were reacting to the Obama administration, and they did, many of them, me included, bought some stuff, learned some skills, started thinking differently, started thinking for the first time in their lives, America might fall apart, and what does that look like? And oh my goodness, what do we do, and how do we take care of those that we care about? Prepping 1.0. Well, something happened that has taken the foot off the accelerator for a lot of preppers, and that was the election of President Trump. True story, I heard this story last night. I can't believe it. It illustrates everything so well. You know what I'm going to say. And that is, I was talking to someone who had a friend, and the friend said, I have all these food preps, all this stored food. Hillary Clinton didn't win, so I'm just going to give it to you. And so they were prepping 1.0. They did all this stuff. Good on them, by the way. Great. You know, there are wildfires in this part of the country, and you could, I mean, it doesn't have to be. That's an important thing. The country doesn't have to fall apart for prepping to be a good idea. I think you guys all know that. But yeah, well, now Trump's elected, so I don't need any stored food. And that's a terrible idea. First of all, don't put your faith in any one person at all, ever, except Shelby, maybe with me, because we're married now, so you should probably do that. But no, I'm just kidding. But don't put your faith in any one person. There are still natural disasters. There are still plenty of bad things that can happen. And we've seen in the prepping community, any way you measure numbers, a lot of people after the election of Donald Trump just quit caring. Attendance at expos like this went way down. Candidly, book sales went way down. There's one way of measuring it. So as John Jacob Schmidt calls it, the Trump slump. I think that's great. Anything that rhymes is usually pretty cool, but it makes sense. So people have sort of, as I say, taken their foot off the gas pedal and are just cruising along. That's a terrible idea. There are still many, many things that can happen, and you need to now take this reprieve, I guess, this time that we've been given, and you need to go to the next level and do all the other things that you need to do to be really, really functional. I think there are going to be some people, like that person who gave away all the food, who when something bad happens, instead of being instantly out of luck and in a bad situation, they have about 2 weeks of Spam and saltine crackers, and then they're out of luck. Don't be that person. Be the person who can have what you need, work with the community. That's so important. This lone wolf idea that people are just going to sit in their basements, I mean, it's silly and it's never going to work. Human society has never worked that way. We were designed to interact with people, and it's when the best results occur when we work with other people. So building community, you can do that now. And then there are some material things. You can learn new skills. I'm a lawyer. I don't know a lot of stuff, but I've been learning quite a bit on YouTube. I say that I have a master's degree from the University of YouTube, and you can learn just about anything. Pick some subjects, start learning. So that's the idea. It's when everybody else is coasting because Donald Trump is president, you need to not coast, and you need to take advantage of the time and take it to that next level, because something bad, whatever it is still going to happen. You wouldn't be here today if you thought nothing bad was going to happen. You would be watching the Seahawks lose again, probably, if you had nothing else to do. So you know something's going to happen. So take it to that next level. So that's, in a nutshell, prepping 2.0, and we've all changed. We've evolved. We've got a lot better at this prepping thing, and so let's do that. And then one of the neat things, if you're a prepper 2.0 and you're squared away and you got some communications going and you've got all these other skills, maybe the prepper 1.0s that, you know, have the Spam and the saltine crackers, maybe you can help them, maybe you can improve their situation. So that's what you need to be. You wanted to be the one who could take care of your family and hopefully help other people, and that's why you did 1.0. Awesome. Now do 2.0, and you're going to help even more people and your family more. And that is basically prepping 2.0. Shelby and I, as I mentioned, we'll be having a podcast. We're going to have cool guests. I've met all these amazing, interesting people as I've done this crazy book thing. Remember, nobody was ever going to read this stuff. That's what I went into this thinking. Nobody's going to read this. And then I couldn't stop writing. And then I sent it to a publisher. The first publisher I sent it to said, would you like a 10-book deal? Do you know how rare that is? And I don't think it's... I think the books are good. I like them. I hope you do too. But I didn't go into this saying, oh, I'm just this guy who's never written books who's just going to have a 10-book deal because I'm just really super neat. This has been a surprise to me. So keep that in mind. I have to bring that up every time, because every time I come here and you guys ask for autographs, or you tell me how some part of the book has affected you or helped you, I can't believe it's happening. So thank you. So I wanted to answer any questions that you guys have, because that's more important. And I learn a lot from these questions too. So here we go. Start on this side of the room. You're itching your head, sir. Is that a question? This is like at an auction. Have you been like at a parent-teacher association auction and they're like, who, seven ponies, and you sit there and you scratch your head, and all of a sudden you own seven ponies, right? You know, I'm putting you on the spot. So
that's cool. I'm curious if you're going to write anymore.
So the question is, and I'm repeating the questions because we're going to be on Radio Free Redoubt, am I going to write anymore? Yes. I'm working on several projects right now. One of them is I'm working with Shelby on story development. It doesn't take much help, by the way, but I'm doing a little bit of editing, but really fostering and encouraging those books. And as you heard John Jacob say, book two is coming out soon, book three is coming out. The cool thing about helping other authors and sort of doing story development is that she's laughing because she knows what I'm going to say. It's cool. I get it. All these cool ideas get out and I don't have to do any of the work. It's so cool. I don't have to write. I don't have to edit. I don't have to spell correctly. And so that's what I love. So I'm kind of lazy. So there's that. The other thing that's coming out is, on the same vein of me being lazy, is 399 days. And there's an author I've worked with before, know him well, and he's from the state of Maine. And he is writing in a parallel time frame from 299 days. So it's the same general idea of a collapse, which is a partial collapse and no crazy conspiracy theories and no crazy racial goofy stuff. It's just stuff falling apart, but falling apart at different speeds and with different intensities in different parts of the country, which is how I think it would be. North Idaho is really, really different than fill in the blank any other part of the country. Hawaii is different than North Idaho. North Idaho is different than Alabama. It's different than Indiana. So I've always been fascinated with this idea, and you saw glimpses of this. Well, more than glimpses, you saw a pretty detailed description of this in the 299-day series. Even within Western Washington, there were different scenarios going on. There was Seattle, which is just, you know, messed up and in a bad shape. And then there was rural Western Washington, Longview and Centralia and those sorts of things. So on that theme of things being different, he came to me and he said, this is what's going to happen in Maine. I didn't know anything about Maine. I thought that they talked funny and that they ate lobster. That's pretty much what I knew. And it turns out that northern Maine is pretty rural and relatively traditional. And then southern Maine is more like the rest of the country. A lot of people from Massachusetts have apparently moved there, and they have a term for it that I'm not going to use here on Radio Free Redoubt. But anyway, so there was that tension, sort of like Eastern Washington and Western Washington and many other places. And so he started writing about how that would play out in Maine. And I thought it was really cool. So I'm working on that and helping him story development and editing, as I say. Shelby and I are going to be and we don't have a name for it yet, but the working title is Don't Dare Call It a Cookbook. And you'll see what I mean by that. It's about the food element of preps. And so it's not a cookbook. There are a million cookbooks out there. Go buy them. Go on the internet. By the way, their recipes are free on the internet. Why would you buy a cookbook, right? So that's why it's not a cookbook. No, but it's the food element of preps. Strategically thinking about what sort of foods should you prepare, where to get food, perhaps grow some food. It's not a gardening book or anything, but it's looking at all the different sources of food, and it should be layered. It should be a little bit of store-bought food, a little bit of bulk foods, all these sorts of things. How to store it, as I mentioned, the, you know, vacuum sealing and all that, freeze drying and all those things, freezing. Again, layering. Expensive things like a home freeze dryer versus like the freezer that you already have, right? And so you kind of blend things together, expensive and inexpensive, hard to cook and easy to cook. How to store it in the sense of storage facilities, like the storage shed in the 299 days book, which was pathetic, where I had to rent something because my ex-wife was not cool with me having stored food because apparently thought I was crazy. Okay, you've read about it. We all know about that. And then one of the cool pieces of this project that I don't see many other people doing as part of the holistic approach to food preps is alternative energy for cooking. There are a ton of alternative energy books and websites, and they're all really cool, and you should look at them and have as much of an alternative energy system as you can. By the way, when I say that, I don't mean a $10,000 solar array. I mean, if you can, that's cool. Little propane stoves, the little camp stove. I call them camp stoves. I don't know what they are, but they're just the one burner things. People use those a lot for canning because isn't it funny how nature is? It's August, all the fruit's ready, and it's, you know, 100 degrees out, and that's when you're supposed to like fire up your kitchen and like heat it, you know, for several weekends in a row. So, you know, you do it outside, those sorts of things. Solar ovens, which are fascinating, not super useful in Western Washington, but many parts of the country they are. So it's the food element of preps. So we're going to be working on that, and that's going to be fun. And as far as recipes go, Shelby has some pretty amazing recipes that would use then these sorts of foods that are being prepared. So so there you have it. So that's one thing. Of course, Ham Radio is not a book. I mean, it's writing in a sense, but it's flashcards. So that, I guess, counts as writing. So those are the ones that are up. There might be some other fill in the blank 99 days things that, you know, instead of Maine being 399 days, there might be another state that's 499 days. I jokingly say if I did a book about how the collapse happens in California, it'd be called 99 minutes. because that's about how long that's going to last. So there you have it. So those are some future writing things. So you didn't even have a question. You were called on. I put you on the spot. You were itching your head. And that was an excellent question. So thank you. And you don't own 7 ponies. You don't have to pay that bill. So, yes, sir. And I'm going to repeat some of this back for the other listeners. He's saying a little bit deeper into the 2.0 concept.
So on water, are you referring to people getting better at storing and learning how to filter and back up?
He's basically asking, what's the deal with upping your water preps, filtering, treatment, storage? And the answer to that is all three of them. Water is one of the most inexpensive things to prep for. It can be inexpensive. Of course, it can be expensive if you put in a pump and a big cistern, that can get expensive. Not nearly as expensive as dying of thirst, which is a terrible way to die. But water treatment pills are relatively inexpensive. There's swimming pool treatment stuff. Probably tastes pretty terrible, but get a lot of powdered Gatorade and things will be fine. By the way, you're not going to live on that. I mean, that's pretty gross stuff. I mean, that's probably not really good for you. We're talking about drinking water here more than, you know, all the other things we use water for. Cleaning dishes, that's going to become a big deal. Can you imagine having really terrible food poisoning that pretty much disables you, you know, for a day or two or a week or two, and all the bad things that can happen while you're unable to move around, basically, because of dirty dishes, basically. And we take all kinds of things for granted. So storage. So it's all of those things. My point is that prepping 2.0 is the topic of water. People need to think about it, and they need to think about how much water they use every day. It's pretty stunning. And perhaps you have an RV, and I know you do. And you think about the water, how much you use, how it works, the gray water, all those things. It's thinking about water. And by the way, the details, I'm not the detail guy. I don't have all the answers about, oh, here's a water cistern, because I don't know. Because here's the thing, I have a day job, I have a family, and like everybody else here, and I don't have the ability to go find all the details. But it's more naming the topic and saying, hey, here's some YouTube videos. That's a big fan. I'm a big fan of search terms. You're going to see this in the PAM radio flashcards. I'll say, I don't know all the deals and all the details about this, but here's a word. And I'll bold it and go look at this in YouTube, and that'll be on a flat. That's my answer to detail. Not that you were asking the detail question, but that is the water answer. And if you can have ponds and you can do all kinds of cool stuff, that's even better. You're going to be able to help more people when they're thirsty. Help people that, by the way, are not just going to kill you and take your water, because that's not cool. We're not going to do that. So that's an overview of the water idea.
So regarding the night vision.
Onto the night vision topic.
Yeah, as far as any force multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
Have you decided on whether or not it's better to buy one's prior?
So the question is, I'll truncate it and abbreviate it. Basically, night vision, should you get really good expensive stuff and it's expensive, or some of the less expensive alternatives? I've not tested the less expensive alternatives. I don't know the answer to that. It's more bringing up the topic of night vision and saying, here's some night vision that's $700, and here's some night vision that's $15,000. I don't expect many people to be able to, I don't have a $15,000 pair of night vision, by the way, or set of night vision. I want people to, and it doesn't have to be night vision, it can be variety of other ways to illuminate things. Just understanding that at night, if things really fall apart, there are going to be all kinds of people that are trying to take your stuff at night usually. And it came to light, no pun intended, for me when I actually got to use some of this equipment, and I realized what an absolute advantage it is. It's cheating. It's cheating at such an advantage. It's like, all right, try to sneak up on me. Far, far away, and you're like, really, is that all you got? I mean, it's unbelievable what an advantage it is. And for people in a defensive mode, like your family, for example, you're in a defensive mode, you're trying to just take care of yourself and have people not take your stuff, what a tremendous advantage it is. And night vision, in some ways, is kind of like ham radio. Everyone hears it and they go, wow, it's really complicated, and it's going to be really expensive, and it's probably against the law to have night vision, which it is not. I imagine some kinds there is. I don't know. I want people to start thinking about it and understanding how important it is. And if you've got limited prepping dollars, spend them on things that are really going to matter. And I'm going to say something unpopular. I'm actually guilty of this. You don't need, like, another gun, usually. I know, I said it. I know, that's crazy, right? We're all, a bunch of guys are laughing here. A bunch of wives are like, yeah, you don't. But that's part of the 2.0, you know? Do we need more beans and rice? Do we need another AR-15? Probably not. You need, how about water? Really good water treatment. I know, he's looking at his wife, everyone in radio land that's listening. And she's nodding her head, yeah. But it's, that's part of the rethinking. Not overdoing, and here's the thing, not overdoing the prepping 1.0 that we're comfortable with. One of the ironies of prepping, and I'm guilty of this too, normalcy bias. We always talk about normalcy bias. Don't have normalcy bias. The 299 Days books are great about illustrating what normalcy bias is, and that's basically everyone assumes everything's going to be normal, and they can't wrap their minds around the fact that things aren't going to be normal. There's a big ice storm, and the power's out for 3 weeks, and people will still flip the light switch and expect the electricity to go on, right? But that's not a big deal. That's kind of no big deal. The problem is when you just assume that the electricity will always be there, so you don't have a plan in place, and it gets even worse when you just get demanding and mean and start yelling at, I don't know, emergency preparedness official or the police or something. You're saying, hey, I love a particular kind of ice cream and it takes electricity to keep it frozen. I want my moose tracks, you know, right now. That's when it gets weird. So we're preppers and we're not like non-preppers because we don't have normalcy bias. However, what do? We got a bunch of beans and rice. We know how to do that. You have a couple hundred extra dollars. What do? Buy more beans and rice. You're falling for normalcy bias in your own preps. And that's why you need to be reminded that there's this next level, this 2.0, and things that are not as cool and exciting, because water is not cool and exciting, but it's really, really important. So there you go. Over, yes, ma'am. So she's saying that after reading the book, she realized how important comms are. So she and the husband got the ham license. Good on you. She said it was not fun to take and presumably pass the test. Yes. Didn't retain the information because there was so much useless information you were required to know for a dumb test. Yes. Yes. Sure. More, and she's asking for more depth about PAM radio. Yes. This all started, and like everything else in the 299 days world, it's not like I had some grand, brilliant plan about what people need to know. Oh, I'm going to tell people all the stuff they need to know because it's a grand, brilliant plan. It started with my own preps and stuff I didn't know. Book one of this book series is all about stuff I didn't know and how I learned stuff. And PAM radio is the exact same thing. So my team, real dudes, somebody had to step up and do some comms work and come up with standard radios and program them and have a little base station and do these sorts of things. So I said, all right, I'll do it. I have this really bad habit of saying, all right, I'll do it. So, but I did. And I thought, well, what do I need to know? And I started researching it. And I realized there was this big, huge mountain, I call it, the mountain of ham radio. It's like, oh my goodness, if I really want to talk to people, you know, 15, 20 miles away, I'm going to need all these things. And it's really complicated. And there are going to be all these connectors. And I got to get a soldering iron. And I got to figure out how to do this. It started really with a little base station, a little mobile base station. And I saw these cool things, ammo cans, you put a radio in, it's got like a little battery charger in there and all this stuff, and it said, now here's the parts list, there's like 80 parts, and here's all the stuff you need, it's like crimpers and soldering irons. I thought, oh my goodness, I got so much else going on, you know, do I really want to do this? Then I saw Hardin Power Systems. They have this ammo can with all this stuff in it. It's already done. It's brilliant. And I thought, well, this is the kind of stuff people need to know about, right? Because they're in my shoes. I mean, and they're in your shoes, too. They're like, well, what do I do for a base station? And then I thought, well, I'll train my guys, team guys, and I'll tell them what they need to know. Because, you know, most of them don't have ham radio licenses. They're just like everybody else. They're busy. It's funny, by the way, the guys, the team, real people in the book, they're about 25 years old when I wrote the books. Now they're like 30, 35, you know, wives and kids and stuff like that. And they're just not sitting around just waiting to take a ham radio test because, you know what I mean? So they've got lives going on like everybody else. So I thought, well, to teach these guys, I'll get a bunch of index cards and a Sharpie, and I'll make a bunch of flashcards because I love flashcards. When I took the Washington State bar exam, I made 1,500 flashcards with a pen. I wrote them. It took a long, long time, and I kept memorizing it over and over again. It worked well. And so I thought, I'll make some flashcards. And then I started realizing in my mind how many flashcards it would take to teach people everything they needed to know. And this is the key, everything they needed to know to be preppers, to not talk to Greenland. They don't need to know, you can, with a handheld radio, if the ionosphere is right, you can talk to the International Space Station. I don't want to talk to the International Space Station. I don't care. I want to talk to the guy down the road to see if a motorcycle gang is coming down my road. That's all I need to know. And the stuff you need to know and the expense and the time it takes to talk to this International Space Station is dumb. The amount of stuff you need to know and the equipment you need to have and the time it takes to talk to your neighbor to see if a motorcycle gang is coming down the road is simple. It's easy. And so I said, okay. So I have this brilliant, okay, in air quotes, radio listeners, air quotes, brilliant idea that I'll do all these flashcards. Now, here's normalcy bias and how I do it just like everybody else. I thought, because, you know, I'm 50 years old. And so I know it sounds old, doesn't it, Shelby? Oh, I didn't tell you that? Yeah. Yeah. All those felony convictions? No, I'm kidding. No. My credit score is awful. I didn't tell you that either in a community property state. No, I'm just kidding. So I don't know where I was going with this. I started talking about credit score. 50 years old. So in my mind, flashcards are like I remember back in the day, and they're printed and like laminated. You take them to a printer and you get a bunch of them made, right? That's how people, old people like me, right, think of these things. So I had this brilliant idea to manufacture these flashcards. And I started looking at the cost of it, super expensive. And I thought, this may not be a great idea. So I'm at work and I'm talking to a guy about 30 years old. And he said, why wouldn't you just do an app on your phone that would have the flashcards? And I said, that's actually a better idea. So that is the genesis and the story of how the flash cards came about. I have 40 beta testers now. Really, really interesting people. Everyone from people who said, I know nothing about ham radio, who's actually who I want to talk to. They're the ones that are going to tell me if this is a good idea and if these questions that I ask and the answers that are given answer their questions. All the way up to a retired special operations guy who did a lot of incredibly interesting in-field communications with a lot of really interesting people. And so everything in between. So that's what this is going to be, and it's going to be a great way, I think, to get what you need and to not have to learn dumb stuff. It is not, ham radio is not a way to prepare for your ham radio test. There are other programs out there. There's other flashcards, actually. You should get a ham radio license, but, you know, it's not fun for everyone, and it's memorizing a lot of dumb stuff that you don't really need. Should you have a ham radio license? Absolutely. You absolutely should, because you can practice without breaking the law. You can practice on the kinds of frequencies that you're going to use when stuff falls apart, and then you won't need a ham radio license, because believe me, the FCC does not have a SWAT team that's going to come knock your door down and say you weren't, you know, you didn't have a license to talk on a particular thing. So you should take your ham radio test. probably after you go through the PAM radio flashcards, the ham radio prep will probably be a lot easier, actually. But they are two distinct things. And specifically, PAM radio flashcards are designed for people who aren't going to take the ham radio test and maybe aren't going to get a ham radio. There's a ton of stuff, practical stuff you can do without a ham radio license. Some CB stuff probably works well. GMRS, FRS, particularly GMRS radio frequency band, service band. Anyway, so there you go. Oh, by the way, with GMRS, you technically need an FCC license. You pay them like $80 and they give it to you. There's no test. It's good for your whole family. See, that? There's a solution. There's your base station solution right there. Yeah, where was I in March, she asked. Let me guess, that's when you took the ham radio test. So that's a great little glimpse into what this practical amateur radio thing is and why it's designed for people exactly like you. So thank you. Very good question. Over here, you guys have been really quiet. You guys are like, you're like the kids that sit in the back of the room and you're just, yeah, no. Yes, sir. Okay, if it's, you say off topic? Okay. Favorite AR manufacturer? Answer is, they're all pretty good. And here's a classic example. I mentioned this earlier. Technology and price is coming down. I don't know if it's as much technology as it is price is coming down because of demand. Although, you know, right now, AR-15s are relatively inexpensive. In fact, they're really inexpensive compared to where they were. You can get great AR-15s for $600-$700, and maybe it's more now, and sometimes my prices are a little dated, so don't count on that, from major manufacturers that are going to do good things. They're pretty much all good. I don't know of a bad AR manufacturer. I'm sure they're out there, but there's an example of the Trump slump and what you ought to be doing during this time period we have, and the economy is generally good. By the way, just because the stock market's really high, doesn't mean that everything's awesome and you're taken care of, because I don't know if you've ever actually gone through the motions in your mind of what it would take to cash out a 401k and how you're gonna get completely ripped off and you have to pay all the taxes now and all the penalties. And they say, oh yeah, it'll be about whatever, 6 or 8 weeks until you get your money. So it's not just an easy solution. Oh, the stock market's high, so I have no cares in the world. Anyway, so get some good, inexpensive AR-15s if that's what you need. You probably have a bunch of them and you probably don't need more. But, you know, and maybe spend money on other things. So, yeah, there aren't many bad guns anymore, I don't think. I'll say that and somebody in the comments will say, yeah, there's this other thing. Yes, sir.
So, just one suggestion, financial planner.
Okay, financial planner.
In the world of prepping, one of the biggest things about 401ks is that, it's going to be expensive to cash out.
401k is expensive to cash out. I'm just repeating things for the other listeners.
That's highly overrated. If you're listening to it, you can repeat the mic.
Sure.
It's actually cheaper for you if you've saved in a 401k.
So if you've saved in a 401k, and you take the money out, yes.
So don't worry about the constant 30%. It's not that.
Right. And his point is, and that's a very valid point, and I was sort of being general there. If you take money out of a 401k and pay the penalties, it's still better financially than to have never participated. And I'm sure that's true. My point was just that, stock market's high, so I don't need to worry. But yeah, that's a good point. By the way, one of the rules I have is that I never give financial advice because I'm not at all qualified to do so. You apparently are. I understand what you're saying, and it seems to be true. So never listen to me for financial advice. I have people ask me this all the time, and I don't know, and I can't help them. I don't want to mess them up. So yeah, this side of the room, you guys have been quiet for a while. Come on. Something about, yes, sir. Oh, and the question is, the State of Liberty, and have I been participating in it? I don't know about participating in it. I'm a huge fan of it, obviously. I live in Western Washington, and I'm not in the State of Liberty. And so, but I mean, I talk to people about it all the time. I love the concept. I think it's entirely possible that it happens, because it's not what the naysayers claim it is. It's not seceding from the United States. It's simply having a second state within the boundaries of what is currently one state. The state of liberty would still have to be approved by Congress, so it's not like you could have some whacked out state of liberty and Congress wouldn't approve it. I mean, if you said, oh, we're gonna have a law in the state of liberty that nobody needs to pay federal income taxes, guess what? Congress is not gonna approve that, so you can't have the state when you do that. So I think it's terrific. I think Eastern Washington and the Seattle metropolitan area could not be more different. And it's tragic that Eastern Washington has to live under the laws promulgated essentially by the Seattle metropolitan area. I have some legislative experience. I understand how caucuses work, for example, and whatever the Seattle metropolitan area wants is essentially what gets voted on the floor of the House or the Senate, which is really what matters. You can have great ideas for bills, and if they don't get a hearing and they don't get a floor vote, they're not law. So it is true that Seattle controls Eastern Washington, and that needs to stop. The differences are becoming more and more pronounced every single day. We have an initiative in Washington State, as everybody knows about, an anti-gun initiative that's on the ballot that is going to really bring this point home to a lot of people in Eastern Washington who before now have thought, yeah, I mean, I'm not like a Seattle person, but I mean, it's not like there's anything really terrible that the Seattle people, voters or legislators, whichever the case may be, are going to do to me and mess up my life here in Eastern Washington. Yeah, there are. And they focus a lot on guns. So I can see it happening. From what I've seen, polling-wise, liberty, the state of liberty, is a popular concept in Eastern Washington. And what I find fascinating is it's actually fairly popular in Western Washington. And the reason is, and by the way, I don't think people in Seattle or Bellevue sit around thinking about the state of liberty too much. So when I say it's popular, I don't mean like people have actually thought about it and come to conclusions in Seattle. But I think if it had to be boiled down and sort of generalized, I think people in Seattle and Bellevue think, let those crazy people in Eastern Washington go do their own thing. We don't care. We never really liked them anyway. I really think that's the sentiment. And so I think that if you could work out the details, and there are details to work out, funding highways would be one that comes to mind. If you, which side of the state is responsible for various state debts? There you go. There's another one. But those are workable. And I think that a lot of people in Western Washington, I keep saying Seattle, which is different than Western Washington. I live in Western Washington, and the people around me, rural Western Washington, don't like the Seattle approach either, and wish we could have our own state too. Maybe that happens. I don't know. It'd be kind of neat if the state of liberty just sort of was the state of Washington minus the 206, the 253 area code, and the 425 area code. There you go. There are your boundaries right there. And those three area codes, you guys get to stay Washington. Everybody else, a lot of people in the 360 area code in rural Western Washington would love to be part of the state of liberty. So there you go. But I think it's entirely viable. It's the solution, the peaceful, political, civilized solution to an extreme difference of opinions between two groups of people. It's much better than fighting over it. It's constitutional. And why do I say it's constitutional? It's in the Constitution. That's pretty constitutional. Other states have done it in the past, West Virginia. We were talking about the state of Maine earlier. It was part of the state of Massachusetts for a while, from the beginning. So it's possible to do. I think it would be better for people in Eastern Washington and Western Washington. It's sort of like the marriage where everybody is mad at each other and not getting along. Sometimes you just move on. And I think that's sort of what it is culturally and politically between Seattle and Eastern Washington. So I'm a big fan of liberty. I think that the design of the flag is really neat, by the way. I think it's really cool. I'm seeing it, by the way, seeing it here, seeing it in Eastern Washington a little bit. And that's really heartwarming. So yeah, big fan of liberty. I can't be part of it because I don't live in the current boundaries of the proposed state. Yeah. Over here? I took you guys by surprise, didn't I? Let's see. Anybody else have any questions? Yes, sir. Back to the water topic for the other listeners on Radio Free Redoubt. Long-term water storage. On property you don't live at. The lowest maintenance. I don't know is the answer. Putting water storage on property that you don't live on, my next question, and I am a lawyer, is do you own it? Okay, you own it. That's kind of a big question. That'd be water trespass, and that's a term I just made up, by the way. I don't know the answer to that, and that's one of those things where I would say, go search it out. You're obviously thinking of the topic, which is sort of my point with Prepping 2.0. In bringing up Prepping 2.0 and the water topic, I will end. Somebody will give me an answer to the question you just asked, and then I'll know it, and then I might be able to describe what it is. There are all kinds of great, I keep talking about YouTube, great YouTube videos on this sort of thing. I would say this, though, when it comes to water storage, and I'm thinking cisterns, probably below ground or above ground.
Yeah, cistern.
Pond or cistern. The only, I don't know, and it's not even wisdom because it's so obvious, is don't goof around and cut costs and try to do these things on your own, because waterborne diseases are a terrible, terrible, completely avoidable, completely unnecessary thing. And that would be ironic. You know, here we are preppers, and oh, yeah, we're not going to be like unprepared people. And then we have a water cistern that we decided to save $50 on. And then everybody in our family, you know, has dysentery. I mean, and I'm not trying to be flippant. I mean, that is a real possibility and why you have to think these things through. I would say this, and I don't know anything about you, but instead of another AR-15, figuring out a really solid water plan and putting the money into something like that. That's what I'm getting at with Prepping 2.0. But a good question. A water cistern is in my future too, by the way. Yep, it's that important. And a little hand pump. Don't rely on electricity. That'd be ironic. Anybody over here? Yes, sir.
So being an attorney.
I'm an attorney. Sorry.
About long term, like a will.
A will? Yeah.
Is that stuff important in a...
I think it is. I think it's estate planning. By the way, I don't do that. And I, you know what I do, by the way? LegalZoom. It's like $89. It's pretty good. And if you have a multi-million-dollar estate and there's going to be a bunch of taxes and stuff, you know, consult people who know what they're talking about, which would not include me. But the idea of having a will, an estate plan of some kind, is a great, great idea. It's peace of mind. You're in control of something now that you don't have to worry about. One thing that's really important is to pick a really good personal representative or executor of the will who's going to get stuff done. I don't know how many people have had this happen to them or have had it happen to a friend where somebody dies and you or your friend are the ones who are appointed the personal representative, and you're looking through shoe boxes of receipts trying to figure out how to do stuff. So, you know, think about that. So, yeah, will is a good idea. Even if stuff falls apart, I mean, wills still count. I mean, maybe they don't because maybe there's no courts to go enforce them in, but it's a good idea to do that. Yeah. Let's see. Anybody else with questions? Oh, you were waving a fly. You were literally waving. There's a fly right in front of you, and you're waving it. So now you have to buy 7 ponies.
I do.
Okay.
not having read your books.
Not having read the books, which is okay. That's all right. Yes. Yes, you purchased one. What's the scenario for things falling apart? The scenario for things falling apart, and I'm running out of time, so I'll give it the short version. It's a partial collapse. It's economic and political and cultural. I mean, the country is incredibly divided. It is not an EMP, and instantly the entire country's thrown into darkness, and there's cannibalism and stuff like that. because I think that's too dramatic. I think it's less realistic. It could happen, but I think the more dramatic things are, the less likely they are to occur. And so given that, I thought of, I believe in my mind, the United States is going to collapse and fall apart. What that looks like, I don't know, but there's all kinds of different levels and intensities of collapses. And Shelby brings up a great point when she's talking on this topic, and she says, ask somebody in Detroit when Detroit collapsed. Because it's collapsed. I mean, it is not really a functioning thing anymore. And people will have different answers. And they'll say, well, maybe it's when, like, no one was paying their water bills. And by the way, people were getting poisoned in Detroit with the public water. The Detroit public schools, I don't know if you noticed a couple weeks ago, they don't let kids drink water in Detroit public schools because the water system's all messed up. That's a collapse. Collapses don't have to be mushroom clouds and all that sort of stuff. Collapse just means stuff isn't working, and or it's not working often. There could be rolling brownouts. So the very short answer to that pretty in-depth question is political things get just bad, and economic things fall apart that way. The debts we have in this country, the public debts, are completely unsustainable, and that sort of thing. So that's the scenario. It affects different places in different ways. Some places are more resilient, North Idaho, natural resources, and people that have a particular set of values that I think is more hardy and more resilient. And then other parts of the country where people don't have the same resilience, and they don't value things like gardening, and they're going to have a much, much, much tougher time. So yeah, there you go. Well, apparently, I'm out of time, ma'am. If you have a very quick question, I'd be happy to answer it. Looking for a financial planner. I have no advice whatsoever on that. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was easy. That's right. Well, thank you guys very much. And for the folks in the room, thank you. And for the folks listening on Radio Free Redoubt, thank you for listening. And please get a hold of me, glenntate123@gmail.com. 299 Days is the name of the book. A Great State by Shelby Gallagher, name of her books. And contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much.